Behind the Bite podcast is part of a network of podcasts that are good for the world. Check out podcasts like the Full of Shift podcast, After the First Marriage podcast, and Eating Recovery Academy over at practiceofthepractice.com/network. Welcome to Behind the Bite podcast. This podcast is about the real life struggles women face with food, body image, and weight. We're here to help heal, inspire, and create better, healthier lives. Welcome. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome. And as always, I'm so glad that you're here joining us today. And I'm sure once you hear who's here today as our guest on the show, you will be glad you decided to tune in as well. I can assure you there's someone amazing here with me right now, ready to kick off one show you won't want to miss. So with that, let me tell you a little about who she is. Dr. Carrie Anderson has specialized in the treatment of eating disorders for the last 30 years. Her unique ability to create a safe, healing environment make her, as clients often state, someone who gets it. Co-creator of the Am I Hungry? Mindful Eating for Binge Eating program, Carrie also co-authored the acclaimed book, Eat What You Love, Love What You Eat for Binge Eating, a mindful eating program for healing your relationship with food and your body. Her newest book, Food, Body, and Love, is to be released in early 2021. Welcome, Carrie.
Hi, I'm glad to be here.
Well, I'm so thrilled you're here, actually. So you've been treating eating disorders for the past 30 years. How did you get into this area of specialization?
Well, I started out in my undergraduate work in exercise physiology and nutrition because I was obsessed with diet and exercise. And the reason I was is because I had an eating disorder. So I actually was one of those that entered the field as a wounded healer. I had what we now know to be binge eating disorder when I was a teenager. And so I didn't get treatment until I was in my late 20s, which led me to get my master's degree and start being a licensed counselor. And then eventually I got my doctorate in behavioral health. But that's exactly how I got into treatment, was just really through my own healing journey.
And that's so common. And as most of my listeners know, that's pretty much how I got into it as well. So interesting. So as for the last 30 years, would you say that eating disorder treatment is the same as it was 30 years ago? Or would you say it's changed over the years?
Well, I think it's changed quite a bit. When I was in treatment and then also my early years as a treatment provider, we actually were using an addiction model, a 12-step model. And not to say that that's not effective with many, many people. And now I have some ideas as to why it is so effective because I talk a little bit about that in my new book. But we moved to a cognitive behavioral framework because the most evidence-based treatments are what we call the mindfulness-based or third-wave cognitive behavioral therapies. And those include mindfulness. And that's why the book that Michelle and I wrote and the program, the Am I Hungry program for mindful eating for binge eating, uses those types of therapies like dialectical behavioral therapy, ACT therapies, mindfulness-based stress reduction. We also use now moving more into what we call embodied types of methods of treatment. And my new book is about those types of embodied treatments, which means that we can't, the premise of it is that all that we're trying to do with food is to change our body physiology, our bodily states. We're trying to move from an aroused state or, let's say, in a collapsed state of our body's nervous system into a more calm and connected and a safe state. And so So it has moved quite a bit. I also use in my therapies, I use things like internal family systems, which is like what we call parts work. Maybe in the 80s, when I started, we might have talked about it as inner child work. So interpersonal therapies and also work very well in the treatment of binge eating disorder.
So I did want to touch base on a couple of things. One is, you know, for anybody out there who doesn't maybe know what binge eating disorder is or maybe has some confusion about that, because I know you said when you were talking that you didn't know you had binge eating disorder. Mm-hmm. So for anybody out there, could you describe what binge eating disorder is or how somebody out there listening would know if they might have it?
Right. Well, most people that have binge eating disorder don't know they have it. They just think that they're failed at dieting and have been able to not been able to manage their weight. Oftentimes, when somebody's younger in the early stages of binge eating disorder, they can maintain a normal body weight because they've got an equally restrictive types of dieting cycles as well as binge cycles. So they balance themselves out. But as somebody becomes older, metabolism starts to change a bit. They're not quite as active. What happens is they get what we call diet fatigue. And so the binge cycles are much longer than the restrictive cycles. They begin to have some weight issues and also then having as part of the lifestyle, not necessarily the weight, start to have health issues that start to occur and that starts to concern them. So oftentimes people that we work with don't enter into treatment for binge eating disorder or get help until they're, midlife. Those that get treatment before, it's wonderful. It's just more difficult for them because usually what their restrictive behaviors to keep it in check are working. And so they typically don't want to look at that issue. Now, binge eating disorder is the most common eating disorder that there is. In fact, it occurs more than anorexia and bulimia combined. And yet it gets mistaken for some of the terms that people will use, which is fine. I don't care what we call it. It's the same thing. But they might call it a food addiction. They might call it compulsive overeating. Essentially, there is this drive and compulsion to eat large amounts of food, and it feels like they're out of control. It feels like you can't stop, even though you know that you can stop. It's just that the brain is kind of locked on to this wanting and longing that pulls you toward this behavior. Interestingly, the food is not necessarily after the first few minutes something that's focused on in terms of that we say that the wanting is much greater than the liking. And what we mean by that is that binge eating disorder is somewhat of a dissociative mechanism. So it becomes very rote and automatic, and we kind of go into this place of escape and don't wake up until this type of a process, we don't fully become engaged until after, let's say, that the food is gone. And then there's a characteristic of binge eating disorder that's very strong is extreme self-loathing, especially around the behavior, self-hate, body hate, high levels of fat bias, weight bias in those people that have binge eating disorder. And the reason is that they see themselves as failed dieters. They see themselves of doing the thing that they loathe and that they that goes against every fiber in their being, and that is not to eat in that manner. And so it's very what we call ego dystonic, meaning that it goes against the value system and the goals in one's life. And that's what makes it such a shameful process. There's many people out there that have what consider emotional eaters or whatnot, in that they haven't progressed into the level of binge eating disorder. Not everybody does progress into a diagnosable eating disorder. And they're equally in pain and feeling trapped in the behavior, as well as some people feel very trapped in their bodies.
Right. And I'm wondering, for anybody out there who's telling themselves maybe, oh, come on, I'm just lazy, I don't have an illness, if I go in, it would just be an excuse for me not trying hard enough. Like, what would you say to them?
I would say that that would be normal people to feel that way. But, you know, there's a lot of people that have these all kinds of reasons why this happens to them. And it doesn't have anything to do with willpower. Essentially, this is a biopsychosocial disorder, which means that there's very, very strong biological components for this to happen. It has to do with dopamine levels. It has to do with your ability to regulate your nervous states. It doesn't, and that doesn't have to do with, oh, I'm not good at regulating my nervous states. There's so many people that are vulnerable to their nervous systems had been retuned because of some, what their body felt was a traumatic event in their lives, which makes them susceptible to these types of disorders. And our GI system, or our gut, is responsible also for our endocrine system in terms of how we manage the food that we do eat. What the choices of the food that we eat are from our gut will determine that. Our brain will determine what it's going to eat before our conscious mind even knows that there's a decision being made. So there's so many aspects to this. And then we live in a culture that is not only food phobic, but it talks out both sides of its mouth, because we're food obsessed at the same time that we're food phobic. And so, and we're body phobic or weight phobic. And so what happens is it creates this perfect storm that is very hard. Our brains are having a very hard time understanding it, because it's driven to eat the most high calorie, high sugar, high salt, high fat foods naturally. Because it wasn't so long ago that we were hunters and gatherers. And if we came across that kind of food in the wild, like, and we didn't have to hike 3 miles and climb a tree to get honey, we can go down to Costco and buy, you know, a supersized jar of it. And so what happens is that our biology wants to eat this stuff when it's available. Unfortunately, you know, the food industry has caught up and essentially has hijacked and tricked our brain. And we don't know that that's really happening. So there's so many nuances and things that are happening that are going on all at the same time that I think that we need to look at it, and that we're being tricked. And our body is just trying to respond. And so taking, you know, getting some help to maneuver these types of things is not because you're weak or don't have willpower. It's just that you need more education and you need the support to be able to handle what's happening in your body.
And that is so true. And actually, I wanted to get more into that. So you've written a book and created a program to help treat people with binge eating disorder. So can you tell us how you got started writing the book and creating the program?
Right. So when I was in my doctoral program, and I didn't go back to get my doctorate until it wasn't in succession. I didn't go back until I was 50. I'd already been 20 years in the field treating eating disorders. And I decided to quit my administrative job at an eating disorder treatment center and to go back and get my doctorate. And the one of the focuses was, well, the focus was that there was, and it's true today, there's very few treatments for binge eating disorder. It's one of the most unrecognized disorders and underserved and helped disorders. And so my goal was to go to school to learn as much as I could about binge eating disorder and what works. And so as part of that program, when I was doing my dissertation and my clinical research to support my dissertation, I decided to write a program, a clinical program, a pilot program to treat it. I reached out to Dr. Michelle May, who had already written Eat What You Love, Love What You Eat for just mindful eating. We talked and she wanted to join me in this project. And so we did clinical trials in my then private practice. And had a program that was for 10 weeks of both a psychoeducational component as well as group therapy. And it ended up being valid for the treatment or stopping binge eating disorder. And so we then wrote the book that supports it. It talks about all those individuals and the profiles of people that went through this study. And then we wrote the workbook. And we've been training therapists around the nation to teach this program and to facilitate these groups. And so it's been going on since 2012.
You know, and I have to say, Carrie, I've been a licensed facilitator for years. And if anybody can speak to how much it helps people, I certainly can, because I've been continually running groups for years and years. And quite honestly, I echo what you're saying. It truly helps people. So I'm so appreciative that you and Michelle wrote the program and the book. So definitely does help people for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, it's really current today. I mean, it was such cutting edge research at the time that we did this, that today it's still what people are using to treat it. And so, and it's 8 years later. So, it's so rich in terms of covering so many bases, so many skills and strategies, as well as getting to some of those deeper, issues in terms of some belief systems that drive our eating behavior too. So, I love teaching it. We currently, I have another facilitator that works with me, and we put together 3 times a year, we do 10 week programs. But I did want to say that there is also, retreat programs that Michelle and I do. And now we've even done virtual because of the pandemic. And then there's many, many people that go through this program individually with their therapists and in individual therapy. Although the research was based on group therapy, which I think is so much more full and rich, and just because you're with people that get you and you can finally speak of this because it's such a secretive type of issue and you can, fully share things without people kind of looking at you funny because they've been there too. But it is also very effective as a self-help program as well.
So if somebody just wanted to read the book and not do the program, do you think that would be helpful for them as well?
Yeah. And then if they really connected to it, then they might look for a facilitator that leads the groups. Or even on the website for the amihungry.com website in this bookstore, you can now get the workbook, the companion workbook. We do recommend that you go through it with a therapist, but it is now available for purchase on the website where it wasn't before.
Great. And so, you know, I love so many things about the program, and most of all, I think the non-diet approach and this weight neutral, all the weight neutral interventions. Mm-hmm. Can you speak more to why maybe the more conventional restrictive diet approach that's weight focused doesn't work for treating binge eating disorder?
Well, it's the very thing that triggers it. And so what we do know now with some neuro research, neuropsychiatric research, we know that it is actually the restrictive process that sets the brain up for the counter reaction of gorging and binging. And so it's really a brain mechanism. And so we have to be very, very careful to, as part of treating binge eating disorder, is not to prescribe the very thing that's causing it. And so that's why, to everybody that believes their food addiction model of abstinence, people will eventually fall off the rails. I've not known very many people that have taken the abstinence model or restrictive route, because people can stay in a restrictive process for, depending on, you know, how long, how much diet fatigue they have, but they can stay in it for very long. In fact, some of the most, we have an assessment called the binge eating scale, or the BES. And some of the highest scores I've ever seen come from this were people that were in a restrictive cycle and said, hey, I got this. I haven't binged in, you know, 6 months. And yet they have all the symptoms of binge eating disorder. Mm-hmm. And so as soon as they fall off of that, then essentially they're not really treating they're just working with the symptoms. They're not really treating the issue, and they're not healing their brain, and they're not healing their gut. And so those are the things that we have to look at. It is a mind body type of intervention. And so, it's not to say, because I'm very weight neutral, because I think that if you focus on the weight, then it sets you up for restriction, and then restriction sets you up for binging. So you have to be careful. It's very nuanced. When I say I'm weight neutral, it doesn't mean that people that come to me that have health issues related to their lifestyle and whatnot, and that they may need to lose weight according to their doctors. It doesn't mean that we ignore this altogether. It's just not the focus. And I believe that if we work on healing the body and working on the relationship with food and the body, that as you heal in time, some bodies will let go of some weight, but that's not like the total focus. Because it's more of a long-term health and wellness and self-care focus.
Right, which is exactly why I think it's great just to focus on the health of the body, because so many people are focused. They come in wanting just, well, when am I going to lose the weight? And I think to your point, it's if you focus more on it, this is an overall holistic, like you getting better and being healthy and having a different relationship with food and looking at the why you're doing it. It's a more of a long-term benefit to everybody. And so I'm wondering, when you get people maybe that come in, much like you're saying, their doctors have told them you need to lose weight. Have you ever gotten people that come in and they're saying, hey, you know, I want to get bariatric surgery and I think I'm just going to go that route versus maybe getting treatment? Like, what would you say to somebody like that?
I completely understand. I would say, well, of course you want to do that. I mean, I think people need to be validated. One of the first things I do is when I talk to somebody is tell me what it's like to be you and to live in your body. Because I think that sometimes practitioners like ourselves that work with eating disorders, we get so focused on, you know, not wanting them to lose weight that we forget mm-hmm. what their experience is. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that people need to feel safe, not only in the therapeutic relationship, but also they need to feel safe in their body, and they're not feeling safe in their body, and it's causing all kinds of havoc. So when somebody comes in and they want to have bariatric surgery, I don't try to talk them out of it right away. I get what I do is I try to educate them as to the numbers of people that have an eating disorder, especially binge eating disorder, and complete some sort of bariatric surgery, end up having worse eating disorders. Unfortunately, people lie to their surgeons. They also, surgeons, some of them don't care. They just want to, you know, rush into the surgery. But I have people that have had, as a result of gastric surgery, have become bulimic and are hurting their bodies. They have become anorexic and their hair's falling out and they can't stop restricting. And then I have people that that feel even further humiliated because they figure out a way around it. And then they, after their initial weight loss, they gain the weight back. And so, and what could be more humiliating to say that this is my absolute last resort, and then for the body not to cooperate, and then to the craving start, and you work a way around it, and then the body wants to protect itself because it feels unsafe and starts to put weight back on. So I don't think it's, you know, it's the magic bullet. I do know that there are some people that it is a matter of life and death. Mm-hmm. And so I have seen some success stories, but I can tell with bariatric surgery, but I could tell you that they worked on their issues as a part of it. And they had to get through their eating disorder anyway, in terms of the healing process for that. So there's so many people that then they have these reactions to that type of surgery and they don't even tell. This one man that I was working with just last week, for 5 years, he's been vomiting everything up that he eats. And he's lost, he was 500 pounds. He lost 200 pounds, but he's a wreck. And his family are like, and everybody around him just said, we can't go anywhere because you have to throw everything up. I mean, it's just that from a social and familial, not only just the body. And I said, so what does your surgeon say? Why don't we, you know, I've never told him that I'm a success story to him.
Oh,
yeah.
Right. And so many stories like that, I would imagine you hear and work with people. And, you know, it's great that you have this program out there because it is available for people to start working on their binge eating disorder. And I think it's wonderful that you're, because like you said, I think the thing is binge eating disorder wasn't even in our diagnostic manual to 2013. So it's relatively new. And I think anorexia nervosa and bulimia nervosa are really, when people think of eating disorders, they really think of those two. And so people may not know, like this man may not have known binge eating disorder was an illness or that he had it.
Right.
And so I'm just thrilled that you have this program out there and this book for people to access, and it's on the web. And like I said, I'm a strong advocate for it myself. So I do hope more people can find it and get the help they need through it. I think it's fantastic. So,
yeah, thank you, Christina.
And now I know you have also written a new book, which I'm thrilled to hear about. So I'm wondering if you could talk to us. I know you said a little bit about it, but could you tell us more about that too?
Yeah, this has been in the works for so long, and we're deep in the editing process, which is seems like it's harder than the writing of the book itself. But anyway, yes, it will be coming out early in 2021. Food, Body, and Love. But the greatest of these is love is actually the title with the subtitle. It's a memoir. So it's a quite vulnerable work for me, because it goes into, and the memoir is a story about how binge eating disorder starts. And from a neurological and a biological perspective, I get into the science. And so but the greatest of these is love is really about what we now know to be what some scientists are calling the love code. And what that is that we now know that mammals were created to regulate their nervous system through co-regulation, through socialization and love. And there's a mix with oxytocin, as well as what we call the social engagement system. Our bodies can get to this sweet spot, if you will, that makes us feel the most safe, connected, creative. It's our best selves, or our best authentic self. And now we know from a scientific perspective is that how we can get there. And so it comes from the perspective of that really our problems with food and our problems with body are largely have to do with not understanding what's going on from a neurological or a biological perspective in our body, and how we are naturally geared toward moving toward ingestion of food and sucking and whatnot as a way to replace relationships. When infants are born, we have this sucking process that is initiated along with oxytocin, the love chemical that our body has, so that we will survive and latch on to our mothers or some carer that that keeps us alive. Eventually, as we bond with our caregiver, we bond through the social engagement of our voice and the, you know, like when we talk, baby talk, women will do this with babies, men will do it with their dogs, which is the very same thing. But that is the tone that our ears are geared to hear, that that little bit of a higher pitch, kind of sing-songy voice, and then the gazing into each other's eyes, and the softening around the eyes. And they essentially, what happens is then we start to look to people to regulate ourselves instead of just sucking and chewing and ingestion. But let's say we didn't bond very well with our caregiver, or there was a breach in that bond, or there was some sort of early childhood trauma, or any type of trauma that happened in early life. And so it's not safe to bond like that. So we naturally resort back to that more primitive way of trying to regulate our bodies, and that is to develop a relationship with food. So when you hear things like, you know, I am having an affair with food, or my food is my friend, my food is my lover, we're not too far off, because from a biological and a neurological perspective, that's exactly what we're trying to do. And so the book really takes it through a process of how that happens, and then into a whole chapter, a third of the book, the last part of the book, about healing and how we heal the body and relationships and move toward safety and into this sweet spot of connection and love and creativity. And so that's what the book's about. Thanks for letting me share.
No, that sounds fascinating. Actually, I'm looking forward to reading it. I'm always interested to hear more about the illnesses. And I think that actually is very educational for many people who are out there and wanting to know more about binge eating disorder, who maybe have it. I think always education helps people feel more normal, and it helps them maybe even want to go in for treatment now that they might understand it more. So I'm very grateful you wrote the book. So
yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So, you know, before we end, I don't know if there's anything else you want to say to anybody listening about binge eating disorder or getting treatment, or anything that maybe is coming to mind that you want to just leave people with.
I would just say that you would be surprised how common it is, even though that most people listening, if you have it, you probably do everything secretly. And living with that shame and is probably just causing you to do it more, because what happens is then you become more dysregulated, and then you go to the very thing that helps regulate you. So it's this real circle. And so I would just say to really try to come at a place of compassion toward yourself. And there's a reason why you do what you do. Nobody chooses this for themselves. Why in the world would somebody choose something that goes so against our cultural norms and acceptability, right? And so to really have compassion for yourself and that there's a reason why I do this, let me learn there is a science to this. Let me, it's not about, you know, character at all or willpower. And then to step out of that and to find somebody that truly understands what's going on and to help you, coach you through this process of being able to live a more authentic life and a life of feeling more connected and not alone. And so that's what I would say is just to give yourself a break and have a little compassion.
Well said, because I think there is a lack of self-compassion and a lot of negativity that goes along with eating disorders. The mind is very mean. So well said. Well, Carrie, I know you've made such a difference in so many people's lives. And I know that people out there listening are definitely going to want to find you after the show, probably buy your programs and your books. So how can they best find you?
Well, the best way to find me is to get onto my website. And it's very easy to find. It's myeatingdoctor.com, myeatingdoctor.com. And so you can learn everything about the books that I have. There's links to order them. There's a little bit more like some sneak peeks for the book that's coming out. And then it also has a listing of my events, my blogging, everything. There's some free downloads and information as well that are on the website. So myeatingdoctor.com will probably give you, it's kind of one stop of everything that's going on with me.
Fabulous. Thank you so much. And for anybody listening who didn't happen to get that down or sometime later forgets that, don't worry. I'm going to be posting all that information and links on the show notes on my website. So be sure to head on over there and they'll be there waiting for you. And thank you, Carrie, for sharing all of that information with us. All right, everyone, thank you for being here and thank you for listening. As always, I hope you enjoyed the show. And if you did, you can rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. You can also go to my website at behindthebitepodcast.com where you can get my free 9-week email course and start your own journey to making peace with your struggles with food and your body. Until next time, to your health, everyone. This podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regards to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither the host, the publisher, or the guest are rendering legal, accounting, clinical, or any other professional information. If you want a professional, you should find one.